You're listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas.
Ladies and gentlemen, the moment has arrived, the moment that I've been waiting for since last May. Welcome back to the award-winning podcast, The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas. I can't express enough my gratitude towards everyone that's made the show such a success, and it's all thanks to the people, not only behind the scenes, but of course my amazing guests. Today, I have to say that this is the perfect way to start, because this interview will be different in so many ways from other players that I've spoken with. It's been an absolute pleasure to research this guy over the last few days and learn so much about the person, not just the athlete that he is. And I'm talking today, it's my honor to invite to my show the one and only Nigel Hayes Davis. My man, welcome.
The applause back there is crazy.
You like that introduction, man?
Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it. Happy to be here.
I've been working on that for the last couple hours. So, you know, I got showered up. I shaved. You know, I had my wife put some makeup on, the whole thing, you know.
Nailed it. 10 out of 10. Stuck the landing.
Hey, man, like we said just earlier, man, thanks for taking the time. And I need to tell you that in some ways, you're like one of the easiest guys to research. But in other ways, it's not so easy to like do an interview with you. You know that, right?
Is that good or bad?
That's going to be up to you to determine by the time we're done.
You're right. Trick question. There's no such thing as good or bad. It just is. Have you heard the story about the farmer, the ancient Chinese farmer?
Are you taking over my podcast already?
No. It's just about. I read a good self-help book. It's called Abundance Now, and one of the points the author was making was that he had a teacher that said to reshape your life in perspective. If you just say the phrase, "Everything that happens to me is good." Mm-hmm. And then live your life like that. So I've started doing that the last like 2 or 3 months. Love the changes in life. But there's also the farmer story where like the farmer had like his son was working the field, and his son got hurt, and everybody in the town was like, "Oh, that's so bad." And he was like, "I don't know if it's good or bad." And then the next day, like the military comes and was like, "We need every abled male child to come." And then I was like, "Oh, you're so lucky. It was good or bad." And then he goes, "I don't know if it's good or bad." So like, it's just a story going along the lines of like, you know, there's nothing good or bad.
I've always felt that way, man. Bad experiences are they're experiences. They're not good or bad. They're just they're life lessons, you know. But I guess what I was getting at was I'm used to like interviewing guys that are just ball players, you know, that where you get to talk about basketball, you get to talk about the way they grew up with you. I mean, you're like this 20-year-old basketball, but I feel like I'm talking to a coach. I feel like I'm talking to an older soul from everything that I've researched, and it made me prepare a little bit more for everything. You feel that way? Do you feel like everything you've been through has made you a little bit, let's say, more mature, so to speak?
No, I wouldn't say. I haven't been through anything crazy in my life, anything in my childhood or my upbringing that's like made me have to grow up quicker or that's made me have to become a man faster or anything like that. I just credit it to I've been blessed with a fantastic, wonderful mother and the greatest man I've ever met in my stepfather, and that combination of people. And then as I just walk through my life, I've been able to come in contact with a lot of, you know, thoughtful, smart, caring people who've helped me. And I would say the credit to what I am today is I just listen. So like, you know, when people say I'm this or I'm that or I'm smart or I'm that, I just tell people I'm just repeating things that I've learned from people that are older than me and people that have done this journey called life a little longer than I have. And you know, just to be able to learn from other people's mistakes or other people's advice. And I think I've tried to do a good job of learning from advice. It's a lot easier and a lot better to learn from advice and experience.
Yeah, I hope you don't listen to too many people though, because you know sometimes you see those Twitter feeds and those Instagram feeds. After a bad game, you know there's a certain extent where you want to listen, and others where you just want to kind of eliminate also.
Right, but what comes with that is the ability to discern.
Right,
that's something I've gotten better as I've gotten older. Is, you know, discernment, knowing who to listen to, who not to listen to, what to what to listen to, what not to, even if it comes from, you know, family. You know, if someone says something to you, you can go like, all right, I really shouldn't like listen to this right now. This is not what I need to do currently, although like it's from someone close to you. Just right. being able to have that ability to sort between that. And maybe that's where, you know, my biggest gift, I guess, and my personality, what I am, is finding that the happy medium of what advice to take, what stuff I'm hearing to take, and what to let go and let pass.
There is an old song that I used to know, and it's an old saying that goes back that if you want to talk to somebody, you have to speak to them in their own language. You know, that's the best way to get through to somebody. And not only do I mean like in French and Italian or Spanish or whatever, but I mean, you got to know who you're sitting in front of and who you're talking to be able to get to know them. But in this aspect with you, you've come here, you speak. My question to you're Lithuanian, you've done some Spanish, you've done, what else?
So here's what it is.
Are you fluent? But are you fluent in these?
I'm going to put it all out here. So I got into an argument with Steph, our assistant, because he wanted to say like, he was better in languages than me. And I said, listen, Steph, you're how old and you've been learning these languages as a European? Like I'm American, first of all. Yeah, to most Americans, there's only one language. It's English. Like wherever I go, speak English.
And that that's in my next question setup, the way there is no other language.
Exactly. As an American, to most Americans, is English. Like speak English. Why don't you know English? Like, but the languages I've learned in like the last 5 years. Right. So like Lithuanian, Turkish, Spanish, Croatian/Serbian, like those languages are languages like I learned while playing in a country. I've never played in a Serbian or Croatian country, right, but it's a very popular basketball language.
Right.
And on any given team in Europe or America, you will find a coach, a staff member, a player, exactly. Someone that speaks, you know, that sort of language. So those languages I've tried to learn myself so I can get by in Turkish and do whatever I need. If you come here, you would think I'm fluent. The same with really? Spanish. Yeah, yeah. If you were here, I could like go the whole day speaking only Turkish, but I'm not fluent. Like, I can't have a conversation like this in any of these languages.
Right, of course.
Yeah. But like I can get things done, which is really the basis of the language and like the countries I've played in that I've learned. The fans and people appreciate that, you know, a lot, trying to be able to learn the native language of the country you play in and try to like bridge that gap of, you know, culture and language and connecting with the people. So I've done my best to try to learn, but no, I'm only fluent in English. My Italian is like really, really good. If I played for, you know, Milan or Bologna, I'd be fluent in Italian in like a month or two.
Dude, my mom was Italian. I still, like, to this day, I speak Spanish perfectly, well, almost perfectly. Some people would say no, but, you know, I feel like a failure every year because I say, man, this year I'm going to learn Italian from my mom. And I never do it. I never get around to it.
It's good. Languages are great. I'm trying to get my mom to learn Spanish. She's been trying to learn Spanish. So she's been using her Duolingo. And she loves it. I try to push her. I told her the best thing she needs to do though is get a speaking partner.
Right.
You have to be able to speak the language. And for me, it's been easier because when I learned Lithuanian, it was the hardest language ever, by the way.
Yeah. That's
like I was in the country. So like I hear it every day, I see it every day, I'm around it every day. So it makes it easier to learn.
But you guys have a disadvantage now though, because when I played, you know, I came over here in Europe in like the late 80s, early 90s, and there was no coaches spoke English. There was your league was your league, but it was all in your native language, whether you're in Spain or Greece or Turkey or wherever. So you always had like one translator to translate everything over in English for you, and he didn't really know what he was doing anyways. So, you know, it's end of the fourth quarter with about a minute left in the game, and he's trying to translate to you, you know, and it's like, man, there's no way. I just got to play by instinct. But I think it says a lot about you as a person that in an atmosphere where you don't need to learn a different language, there's no need for you to be successful, to learn a different language, to be as successful as you've been. I think it says a lot about you as a person that you're trying to learn these different languages and different cultures.
Yeah, no, it's definitely one of the goals, just to immerse yourself. Like I said, it makes the experience better. It makes it, the fans love it. The everyday people you meet that aren't fans, you interact, it makes it better. It always brings a smile to someone's face when, you know, they look at me and go, oh, he's an American. And then, you know, I can have a conversation in your language. Right. And you can see a smile on their face. Now people are more welcoming, more receptive to you, more able to help.
Of course.
And then there's a Lithuanian phrase, actually, that I learned from Yankee. Was he one of their sayings in Lithuanian was like, the more languages you know, the more you know.
The more you know, right.
And so like I took that to heart as well. Just languages have their own expressions and everything. And there's just so many things that you can learn by speaking another language and being able to connect with different people. And you never know when you need it. You never know when I may be somewhere in America and someone's in an emergency, only speak Turkish, and then I show up like, ah.
I think the best piece of advice I had when I first came to Spain was, the only two things you need to do is be a good teammate and learn the language, and the rest is like the rest pretty much goes by easy. Of course, you gotta play also. That always comes to it. But let's get into what's most important here. You got your family, man. It's because it's what you're all about. It's what you're made of. It's who you are today. Start with your brothers and sisters. Tell me a little bit about, I know about your relationship with your stepdad. Is theirs the same as yours? Is it similar?
I have an older brother, two younger sisters. We all have the same father. And you know, parents got divorced, mother remarried, and she remarried to Albert Davis, hence the Davis added.
Right.
A lot of people are asking, you know, about the addition to it late. And it's from me growing up and then being in the relationships I was in and then seeing him as a man, what he did for a family and what he does for my mother. And then as I get older and then I start, you know, being in a relationship and like, I'm like, okay, like now I'm seeing what you're doing and understanding. So my appreciation for him grows every day. And, you know, that was a way to like, you know, to show him how much that I appreciate for what he did. You know, you would be hard pressed to find a man, marry a woman who has four children. It's a very short list of men that sign up to do that. So for him to do that and the sacrifices he made, and one of my favorite stories to tell about him is in college, my mother wanted to watch one of the games, and he worked at Chrysler, and he finished like an 8-hour, 9-hour shift, got off work, it drove all the way to Wisconsin, which is like six and a half hours, watched the game, drove all the way back, and then went into work as soon as he got back. He did all that because my mom wanted to watch her son play.
He was a line worker in Chrysler. That's work.
Yeah, it's not easy work. I'm telling you, it's not easy work.
That's not sitting
at a desk.
You can't go sit in your chair, close a window for a minute, take a nap for 20 minutes. You're on the line.
He's working his ass off. So for that story right there is, you know, like the epitome of what he will do for my mother and then what he will do for, you know, myself and my siblings. So like I said, greatest man I've ever met, aspiration to be as great as he is. So that's what I try to strive to be. And then, like I said, I have my older brother used to play football growing up, college football player at Ohio State and transferred a couple times. My two younger sisters, they moved and they work their jobs. And, you know, we have a family group chat. It's called Wakanda, like from the Marvel movie Wakanda. So
okay,
yeah, in our family group chat, it's hilarious. Everyone's funny. family's hilarious, actually. Like one of the best parts about my family is that we love quoting movies. And there's a lot of movie lines that we watched, and like a situation will happen, and we'll just quote a movie line from something, and like it always fits and is applicable to the situation. But no, everything's good. It's all about the family. It's all about, you know, taking care of stuff. And then my mother has been extremely instrumental in, you know, the person I am today, of the values and characters that she wanted me to be and wanted all of us to be. And I just try my best every day, you know, to if I can make a decision in life and I go, you know what, Nigel, good job, I'm proud of you. And then if I know my mother and family would be proud of me, then, you know, I know I'm doing something right.
Yeah, you. It's funny because all this stuff that I've researched throughout all the interviews and that I've looked up, is like you talk about your stepdad so often that you almost put your mom in the back seat sometimes, you know?
And
I'm like,
This is what I would say right here. So this is the relationship though. And I'm glad you said it. So like, I want this one to be the clip everyone uses. So like, I talk about my stepfather all the time. You're right. And everyone's like, oh, what about your mom? But everyone knows that I love my mother dearly.
Of course.
I love my mother so much that like, in order to save my, like, let's say we're walking down the street and I had to push my stepfather in front of a truck to save my mother, I wouldn't even think about pushing him. But the reason why he's so amazing is he would go before I could push him because he wouldn't want me to feel bad about it. And he would care that much about my mother and myself. So like, that's the relationship. Like, I'd push him in front of a truck for my mom, but he would jump before I could push him.
Man, Nigel, listen, it's so funny, man, because that was a question I was going to put into this interview. And I'm like, nah, I mean, that might be a little bit too much, but you just did it for me.
Yeah, no. So that, hopefully that sums up the relationship.
There you go.
That I speak about when I speak about my parents.
Because he stepped into your life at about six, right? Your biological dad was divorced from your mom, so you don't have much of a relationship there at all, do you?
Zero relationship. I haven't spoken to him in, I don't know. So people ask me that question and they go, oh, how does it feel? It's like, it's great. Everything's perfect. Like literally, the man my mother married, Albert Davis, has taken on the role as a father, and I have not had a void or a slip or a gap right. in any way, shape, or form as a male role model, as a father figure, as, you know, even him in early stages of helping me become a basketball player, you know? So like him making me dribble around the driveway, the chairs in the driveway, we had these lawn chairs and he would make me dribble around the driveway with my left hand. So that way I'd be able to use both my hands. So
that's probably right before he had to go take a 9-hour shift at the Chrysler player.
Greatest man I've ever met, I tell you.
Hey man, I heard you say in a bunch of interviews that you have no idea where you would be without him or obviously without your mom, but my question is the opposite. I've heard you say that I wouldn't be here today with you or speaking with you if it wasn't for them. My question to you is, where would you be without them?
Where would I be? I have no idea. I mean, I don't know. A mother, well, see, that's a good question. I don't know. I don't know. I mean, it's hard. It's like, you know, the whole nature versus nurture thing. I had extremely fantastic nurturing from my parents. And, you know, they made sure I grew up in a nice environment. Fortunately, I didn't have to grow up in rough times. I had everything I needed. I had things I wanted. I remember, again, another story. I remember I was playing for the YMCA, and there was these pair of Jordans that came out, and my stepdad knew I wanted them. I had to have them. And they were like $160. Mom was having a fit about it. Right before my game, he shows up with the shoes. Ah, gosh. Loved it, man. So I don't know.
You went out and played with those shoes on?
I went out and played with those shoes on. They were so nice. I didn't even want to get them dirty, too. They were white shoes. Imagine that. Imagine trying to play a game. I was trying to get your shoes dirty.
That's what I'm thinking about you posting up someone down logo, man. Don't step on my new kicks now.
Yeah, like don't like move. Just everyone move softly and quietly when you walk around. But the life I've been able to have and continue to have and lead, I would rather not even think about the what if I didn't have them.
Talk to me about Wisconsin, man, because I heard through the interview some other research that it was your mom's decision to send you to Wisconsin, even though that's far away and Ohio State was right down the road. And you were brought up in the Buckeyes. Here in Spain, we call it Toledo, but you know, you were brought up in Toledo.
Yes. Yeah. So about that decision. So my final three colleges were Wisconsin, Ohio State and Stanford. I want to go to Stanford the most.
I know, but that was my thing. I was like, I can't believe he said no to Stanford.
If Stanford was maybe one time zone over.
I know. It's far away.
It was just so far. Stanford was excellent. Campus was great. The visit was great. You know, everything was fantastic. It was, I mean, it's Stanford. You know, hey, it's Stanford. That's all you need to say.
It's basketball. It's education. It's atmosphere. It's everything. I mean, Stanford has everything.
Everything's perfect. Stanford. Yeah. But, you know, it was just too far. Yeah.
Albert ain't jumping in no car after his Chrysler shift and getting to Stanford to watch you play.
Hey, he hates planes. He would drive to Stanford.
He was still.
You think I'm kidding? He drove to. We played the Final Four in college in Dallas, and he drove.
No way.
Toledo to Dallas. Yes, he hates flying. But I digress. My last two schools were Wisconsin and Ohio State. I always wanted to go to Ohio State, but my parents just didn't like the way the recruitment process went. It was like it was kind of like, you know, imagine trying to ask a girl to the prom that you really want. She says no, and then you go back to your like option B. You know, my mother wasn't. She's no.
My son ain't option B to nobody.
Exactly. So I wanted to go there, and we went to Wisconsin. She loved it. Lamont Paris was the man who recruited me. Fantastic job of recruiting. Great guy. The visit was great. Staff, everybody was good. Everything was good. But I didn't want to go there. I wanted to go to Ohio State. And my mom just, she like did not want me to go there. And like, I just knew it. And my dad, we knew. I was like, she does not want me to go there. So like, she didn't even know. I did not want to go to Wisconsin. I would just say that right now. But I just did it because my mom wanted me to. So called Bo Ryan, told him I'm going. I went there because she said it. Oh, boy, was she right, huh?
Yeah. I know the people of Wisconsin were happy with your mom. That's for sure.
Yeah. Yes, she's the reason I went there. She was the one who wanted me to go there, so I just listened to her, and great 4 years it was.
I'm not gonna bring up the national championship game where you lost to Duke, because I know that's kind of like a little.
We didn't lose to Duke. We lost to Coach K.
We lost to Coach K. Okay.
Just watch the game. There was a timeout in the second half. Coach K calls a timeout, gives a look at three members wearing striped shirts. And then after that,
everything changed.
It's real tricky. Real tricky after that.
I mean, I'm over here in Europe, so I could go that way if I need to. But we're going to stay out of that, because I'd rather talk about, and there's maybe people that are listening that aren't up to date on college athletics in the States. So I'm going to kind of fill them in a little bit. And the NCAA is, you know, I mean, there's a lot of different words I could use, but let's just say it's an organization that controlled everything, because I want to, you know, be politically correct. And eventually over the years, it pretty much lived off of the names and the fame of their star athletes that they recruited, and, you know, the student athletes, supposedly student athletes that came in that were actually human beings, were not treated as that. They're, you know, if they got any type of perk, any type of meal, any type of whatever, they could become ineligible to play for an entire season. If you transferred from one school to another, you'd have to sit out 2 years. When I played, it was 2 years if you transferred. If you transferred within conference, and then if you transferred outside of conference, it was a year. And then, you know, of course, you still see, but you used to see the college athletes sit at a coffee shop or a bookstore, or whatever, signing autographs to their shirts, and not getting paid a dime, because you can't even give them a cup of coffee, because they were so strict. But you fought that. And I think that's probably one of your most impressive stats in your career. I mean, I don't know how much you had to do with this NIL now, this name, image and likeness. But I mean, you fought it. You were verbal about it, and that couldn't have been easy, because you're dealing with a huge. Again, I'm trying to stay away from saying what I really want to say, but you deal with a huge organization that is very, very controlling.
No, for sure. So that was an accident as well. So my freshman year, going into my sophomore year, had a teammate, senior Zach Bohannon. He told me, like, hey, there's this guy. They have a court case. It's about getting players played. I think you'd be great for it. And I was young, and I was like, oh, my God, the senior thinks I'm going to be great for something. I'll freaking do it. So, like, I just did it. I had no idea what I was getting into. Like, because you don't know what you don't know. And I wasn't aware that, like, players should be getting paid and we should be doing all this. And then as I started to learn about it, I was telling my mom, I said, man, my freshman year, I wore number 10. There was not a number 10 jersey in the bookstore. My sophomore year, there's a lot of number 10 jerseys there. Interesting.
Who's getting that money?
Exactly. So that started, and I said, I see. So we just started meeting with the lawyers and the court cases, and I could never talk about it for the longest time because it was always ongoing. And then, like, the pinnacle moment was the college game day sign that I held with my broke Badger. And then I put my Venmo account, and it started because the week before, the same way we're just regular college students. There was a college student that was like, hey, mom or dad, I'm broke. Send beer money. And he put his Venmo. Got thousands of dollars.
No way.
Thousands of dollars. Circulates Twitter. Everyone was like, oh, what a feel-good story. Random college kid gets all this money. I go hold up the sign. I'm the most ungrateful player of all time. Shame on me for not just taking my education and wanting money.
And plus, you'd be declared ineligible if anybody sent you money.
Exactly. So the way I did it, though, I did my research. I talked to the people without telling them what I needed to do. So I figured out, hey, the Venmo was never in my name. I never got any money. It was in my friend's name, Tori. So Tori, all the money went to Tori's account. And so I never got a dime, never touched a dime. So all I did was hold a sign. It's not illegal to hold a sign.
Right.
So they did all that. And then the part that people don't realize, and this stems from my mother and her upbringing, was all the money that was put into that Venmo account, I worked with a member from the Boys and Girls Club. And there was like five or six families that I took like Christmas and Thanksgiving Day shopping to get toys and groceries. So all that money was given to these families so that they could have all that. But that's the part that they don't tell you.
Of course not.
You holding the sign. They don't show that all that money went. And, you know, they don't show the moments of, you know, the real reason why I did it. And I knew I was going to do this the whole time is, hey, you know, there's mom in there with her kids who's like crying, hugging me behind in the back of, you know, Target saying, thank you for allowing me to have Christmas for my kids while her kids are running around and they can pick any toys that they want. You know, they just want to show ungrateful college athlete, you know.
But, you know, later on, you wanted to show that even more because in September 2023, you opened up a foundation for your mom.
Her birthday, yes.
It was on her birthday?
The Panther Fund, yes.
And what does that do? Explain it, what it's for, because it's essentially for kids, right? They go to school, get education.
Yeah. So the high school I went to, my high school alma mater, it's a fund that was opened up, you know, just look at it as a bank account. I opened an account under the school, named it the Talia Davis Panther Fund, and the money I put in there, and anyone else who wants to donate or contribute, this money is used for students who have to pay for school fees, who can't pay for school supplies. Let's say we have career tech classes. So if someone wants to be, you know, an engineer or in culinary, or if they want to be in marketing and there's a field trip, and if they can't afford the field trip, the money can be used to provide them money to go on these field trips. So it'll make sure that at the most crucial point in time when, you know, students are in high school trying to figure out which direction they want to go, that they don't miss out on an opportunity to do something or to have something that will put them in a better position.
Dude, man, that's just so impressive, man. It to me, it's like a lot of athletes, and you know, I grew up an athlete my whole life, and there's a selfish side to us. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, you want to be the best you can be. You only concentrate on yourself. You usually don't think about anybody else outside your box. You know what I mean? But it seems like for you, it's different. Things matter to you, and I'm assuming that must come from your stepdad, from your mom, and everything you've grown up in. But it's impressive to see people that, you know, because I even saw your basketball camp. You know, you gave out the shout out to all the sponsors, you know, and you know, it seemed like, you know, you had to go to all these people and like ask them for donations, ask them for money, you know. So that, I mean, that's just good stuff, you know what I mean? So that all these kids could go to a camp for free.
Yeah, so that's what, so the camp, I wanted it to, I saw actually one of my high school teammates and still friends, Chris Wormley, NFL player, he had a camp like a week or two before, and he gave a free camp to the kids. And my mom's been telling me I have to do a camp and give back to the kids. Always listen to my mother. So, sure, mom, let's do the camp.
Hey, you went to Wisconsin.
Exactly. Of course, there's got to be a free camp, you know, got to be a free camp. So I worked with Ashley, who's within my agency. I asked her, what do other guys do? Because, you know, she represents some NBA guys. What do they do for camps? So I can kind of figure out what I need to do. And then I worked with my high school coach, Bruce Smith. Love him. And then, like, I worked with a lot of different people. Also, there's a gentleman, Montrese Terry from Toledo, who's really, like, integral in the community in terms of setting up all of these, like, charitable donations and making sure that the community is a community. So yeah. I worked with him. I reached out to the local businesses. Hey, I'm running a camp. If you'd like, you know your name, I'll have signs showing your business supported. I'll put it on my Instagram. I'll have it on the back of the t-shirts. So businesses donated, I put in the money and got everything. And then the community, as they found out, everyone starts, you know, coming around to help. And my mom was worried for a little bit, because she was like, how is all this going to come together? You didn't ask this many people to help you. And I'm like, I don't know, mom, like when you do something good, it always works out. So I show up the day before my camp. I have like all these signs to put up. I have to pump up like 300 damn basketballs and lay out t-shirts and all that. And then like,
now you got to work on top of it.
Yeah. As I get there, there are people from my high school that was there when I was in high school. They're like, oh, hey, Nige, I saw you doing the camp. Like, can I help? And I'm like, yeah, sure. So everyone just walking around just starts helping. And the next thing you know, there's like 15 people helping me set up tables, pump up the balls, and everything is going great. And I looked at my mom like, hey, mom, told you, when your heart's in the right place and you do something good, it always works out.
It's always going to work out. People love to help out, you know, and they love it. And then free camp for the kids, that's amazing. Hey, let me ask you a quick question. I'm going to give you a little trivia shot real before we do our EuroLeague trivia at the end. You ever heard of Zweigels?
Zweigels?
Yeah.
I have not.
Yeah, I'm disappointed in you, my man. I got
to
tell you.
I hate to let people down, too. Now I'm going to be up all night thinking about why I did not know Zweigels.
Well, you should, because explain to me this little invention that you have, the Hirana.
Oh, gosh. So the Hirana's, I have a meeting tomorrow, too, actually, a Zoom meeting with a marketing lady who's going to help me. It's going to be great. But it's a hot dog bun grilling tray.
Hey, wait, let's start this. And most people probably already know this, that you're a vegan.
Oh, that's the funny part. That's the funny part is I don't even eat hot dogs. But I know people love hot dogs. So yeah. It's a grilling tray, two hot dogs, one bun. By the time you finish two hot dogs, you can toast two buns. And what people don't realize is that a toasted hot dog bun is infinitely better than a dry, flaky bun.
Man, no, I don't understand why no one knows that. It amazes me that, I mean, even if I make a hamburger on my grill, I'm grilling the bun.
Yeah, you grill the bun, right?
Of course. Yeah, you have to.
Exactly. So I found a way to make that, you know, portable, affordable, portable and affordable. We love that.
There you go.
And
how much does it cost?
It's $19.99.
Okay. And if I buy it within the next 48 hours?
If you buy, should we do like a EuroLeague special? Oh my God. You know what? The EuroLeague 10 or EuroLeague 11, because I'm 11. Or no, what was your jersey number?
No, I was number 8. I was always number 8.
Number 8? I'll go with the highest number then. We could figure it out. But yeah, so it's detachable handle, grill top stove, electric top stove. You can take it outside the grill. And it is great. It's something that people don't know they need until they see it. And they'll go, hey, I actually would use this and want this. So it's the hardest part about the whole entrepreneurial world is, as from the research I've done, is getting over that hump of why am I not a millionaire yet? Like, you know, it's like you put in all your money and now you're in this phase of marketing, introducing it to people and telling people like, this is something you can use. You'll love it. And that's the part.
Nigel, you know why? Because every step you take to sell that product, someone's got their hand out, getting their 15% for this, getting their, you know, distribution 15%, put it on the shelves 15%, sell it here 15%. Everybody's out getting the money, you know?
You have to be willing to lose money to make money, and you have to be willing to, because I'm in the stage now of the losing money to try to make money. And the stage of being told no. And you gotta, as an entrepreneur, you know, even I watched the JJ Redick, or it may have been Pat Beverly, but Mark Cuban was talking about him going through that phase of early on of being told no, right. no, and still sticking with something. And it's the people who can take 10 no's, 20 no's, 100 no's, and then you get that one yes, changes your life.
No, no's were the best thing that ever happened to me. People telling me that I couldn't do this, I couldn't do that. Whenever they tell me I can't do anything, I'm going for it even that much harder, you know?
Exactly. Nothing like extra motivation from a no, for sure.
Yeah, but so now let me get back to Zweigels, okay? Because as a matter of fact, the funniest thing is I'm doing some EuroLeague research on you, not your, you know, your basketball stuff. You know, on the bottom of the bottom of all the stats and the games and everything else, it's the Oscar Mayer. Oscar Mayer is one of the sponsors. And
really?
You see the hot dog. Yeah. If you go into If you go to like last year's playoff, we'll get into that in a minute. If you go like you look at the five games on the bottom of that, it's an Oscar Mayer sponsorship with a hot dog and the mustard on and everything else. But dude, Zweigels is they come in red and white hots, and they're from Rochester, New York, where I was brought up, where I was born and raised. And it's the greatest hot dog you'll ever eat in your entire life.
A Zweigel hot dog.
Zweigels, yeah, exactly. Z-W-I-E or E-I-G-L-E-S from Rochester, New York. You look it up when we're done, and you get in touch with them and see if they can sponsor up with your new product.
So that's exactly what I'm talking with the lady about tomorrow. She did her research, and she found New York and L.A. are the highest consumption of hot dogs.
Zweigels hot dogs, man. Check them out tonight. They're fat. They're best hot dog ever. Best hot dog ever.
Okay. Thank you for that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you're not going to thank me for it, because I'm going to be getting some sort of percentage off of this.
No. It's coming, don't you?
And I like the way you said before, we'll go with the higher number.
Yeah, we'll go with the higher.
Hey, let's move on to something quick. I want to do something quick and easy before we head into Europe. NBA experience wasn't that great.
It wasn't. That stemmed from just like learning how to play basketball. Like Wisconsin, mm-hmm. like was a system school, and it's like, right. It's a great system, and it works. It works fantastically. We went to two Final Fours and a national championship.
Yeah.
But it's not, you know, NBA professional basketball. And the beauty of that is, you know, I can technically say, you know, you achieved a dream playing in some games. And then, you know, coming to Europe and, like, really learning how to, like, learning more about just how to play basketball. Like, it's two different worlds, honestly, you know. The NBA and EuroLeague are two completely different brands of basketball. They're really not even comparable.
Was it a dream to you to be drafted and be in the NBA, or was it just kind of like
every kid's dream who plays basketball,
right?
But the dream, the goal, your journey doesn't, you know, in there. There's many paths to the same destination. There's, you know, many ways you can take. There's many places you can go. There's many people you can meet. To all get to the same spot, you know, it's not where you start, it's where you finish, and even more importantly, what you gather along the way from the start to the finish. So everything that happens is good, you know, and I was supposed to come over here.
I think that's how we started the conversation, saying a little bit like there is no bad experience. I just saying, man, I went to Sacramento, made the team, which was, you know, I was a fourth round draft pick. That was back when there was 17 rounds still, you know. And you know, I always talk to players like, you know, that the dream you had, of course, my dream was to be a professional baseball player. It had nothing to do with basketball, to be honest. But when I became an NBA player, it was like, man, I'm living the dream. And all of a sudden I got cut like 17 games later. I'm like, wait, hold on a second. That part of the dream never existed in my mind, you know?
We can discuss that part of the dream. Wait a second. it's good. Like I said, it's all part of the journey of life. Like I said, you know, like I like to say, who knows? What if I do get drafted and then have a career-ending injury because I got drafted? You never know. You know, things happen how they happen, everything. Like we said, everything that happens is good. So came to Europe, met some people that become lifelong friends.
Exactly.
Met some coaches, some teammates. Met some other, you know, just like one of my – because I'm in Turkey, I met a guy, Emery, at a burrito shop in the middle of – a street in Istanbul, you know, and just like now he's a lifelong friend. You know, the day I get married, he'll be at my wedding. So like, you know, stuff like that happens. You know, you can't predict anything like that. And it's good. Like I said, the experiences, I've been able to travel and be in all these places in Europe and you know, looking back at obviously being in America, where I'm from, Americans look at, you know, traveling to Europe as like dream vacation. I started 2 years ago in the summer, and then even last year as I was traveling on my off days, like now I go to, you know, dream vacations and dream trips, you know, on off days just because I feel like going.
How many times you look back, probably like me, and I'm just like, man, that little kid from Rochester, that little kid from Toledo just is traveling the world and seeing so many things that you never thought was even open to you.
Right. There's a whole lot. Like, for example, like I didn't know Lithuania was a country growing up. I'm telling you, before I played for Žalgiris, did not know it was a country. Great experience though. Fans are great. I always say probably the best basketball fans in the world. They're great. People are great. That whole experience was great. But, you know, just even being able to do that, and then the most joy I get to from all the traveling experiences is that when you watch movies and TV shows, and then like I see something and I was like, wow, I was there. Yeah, I went to that place. Like, that's crazy. Like, people are watching it like, wow, look where they're at. This movie was filmed in Paris, or this movie was filmed here. And I was like, oh, you, that restaurant? I went to that restaurant in Budapest. It was, I watched the movie the other day, and it was this really nice restaurant. And I'm looking like,
I've been there.
I sat there. So I paused it, and I look at my pictures, and I'm like, Mom, look at this movie. I was there in that chair. So, like, you know, doing stuff like that is great. So being able to travel the world, play basketball, meet all types of people, it's been great.
Talk to me about playing with Saris, man, because coming in from, like you said, a system program, I mean, you kind of sound like an NFL quarterback when I say that, you know, but you know, coming in from a system, and you run into a guy like Saris, who's inexperienced in coaching at that point, because he just started coaching, kind of like did a player to the coach thing. And I know he, you know, he used to play for Selko Obradovic, who I played for 3 years. And those two can go at it, man. They can get into you, man. having that being your first European experience, tell me about it. It had to be a not only a culture shock, because you didn't even know Lithuania was a country.
Right.
But then you run into this superstar coach, ex-player, and he's all in your face about things.
Yeah, so my first European experience was with Galatasaray Ertuğrul Erdoğan, but my first EuroLeague was Žalgiris.
Right.
And it was good. I appreciated him more the second year, even though in Barcelona, like, obviously I didn't have a great year, but in the middle of that year, I would always tell my agent, my friends, like, after I'm done with this year, like, I'm going to appreciate this year so much, even though it's like, is being in the middle of a shitstorm, and right, you can see, like, when that sunlight comes, it's going to be great. But no, I love difficult to play for, because he expects perfection. And because of that is why my last season was so good. When everyone's like, oh, you had such a great year, it's because of like that, like, constant, like, be perfect, do things the right way. And that's what I appreciate about him the most. I always tell anyone in Europe or America that he's probably the smartest coach I've ever played for. And I don't want to say that and then my current coach or other coaches go, oh, what do you think about me? But like,
don't tell Demetrius that.
I mean, I know. He knows he's my fucking guy, though. Yeah, Etudis knows. He knows. But no, just from like just the X's and O's that Shars has, and like just the basketball mind to be around that. I always tell people he's one of the smartest minds I've been around. And what I appreciate the most is that he, and I told him to, even though like he wasn't a great defender, he helped me be a great one.
Right.
Which is funny, because my role in Barca was like the 3-and-D guarding the other team's best player, whether that was, you know, a little point guard, or I had to guard a four man or whatever, you know. And then like the ability to like read the game and like manipulate it. Mm-hmm. So that way, like on offense, like I can be in spots where I want to be, you know, not where the defense wants me to be. And then like the last and most important one is like his level of focus. Like he like just be focused for those 40 minutes, do everything right. Like, don't make a mistake. And obviously, you know, it's not possible, but like his expectation of that was that. And I tell the guys, like, I remember games where like I'm guarding a guy in ACB, and it's like this guy averages like 17, and like he has six, right? I'm doing my job. He has six. And then he scores, you know, it's like 5 minutes left in the game, and he scores a layup, and now he has eight. And Charles is cussing me out. And you would think this guy has like,
and you're up 20.
He has 30. He has eight. You know,
they want, hey man, they demand perfection, man. That's the, you know,
that's what I tell people. That's what I like. His focus was just like, just do it when you're on the court, just do the job, do it the right way, no matter the score, no matter how you're playing, just like do your job, do it the right way. And when you're done, you're done. So, like it was great. I appreciate a lot the experience, because it helped me become a better basketball player. And, you know, I think a lot of people who play for him can say the same thing. They can tell you, hey, it was extremely difficult, but it's very rewarding. And you like, it sounds weird, but you like, you know, you appreciate, I guess, like what you went through because of what it makes you.
You know what I compared it to with Zelko, when I played for Zelko for 3 years, it was like college. It was like, man, you hated it when you were going through it because it was so hard. But then you look back and like, man, that was the best 4 years of my life.
That's what people say. Like, I remember one point though, like in Žalgiris, when I played for Žalgiris, like we were on a losing streak. It might've been seven EuroLeague losses in a row and we weren't getting blown out. We were losing by like two and three. Like we were like, our lost point margin was like 1.2, but we were in like eighth place. Yeah. And we're like, how is this possible?
Welcome to the EuroLeague.
Yeah. And we'd be, we'd be watching film and it'd be tip ball play each play, you know, then you'd be like,
stop.
What did you do wrong? Why did you do it? What were you supposed to be doing? Where were you supposed to be? cuss words. All right, next possession, you know? And it's like, and you watch, like, after seven games of that, you know, you're like,
wow. You feel like, I watch you play sometimes, and I've watched you over the years between Žalgiris and the year in Barcelona, and now with Fener. I feel like you need confidence from your teammates, from your coaches. I feel like you play better. You're more comfortable when you feel like everybody's on the same page around you. You know, like I say, you know, I heard you say something about Barcelona being a little bit different. You were given a different role. Does that have something to do with maybe the up and down nature sometimes of your numbers or?
No, I would say in Barcelona, it was just like, I don't know. It was just, it's different because your role is different because like, the talent level on the team, you know, so like your role is whatever is expected of you is different. But coming to Fener last year was like the promise I made to myself that like I wouldn't let tough coaching or I wouldn't let like whatever affect my mood and affect me trying to be like me trying to be appeasing to like what's being asked of me. And that's like you look at players and there's like players who are like, all right, whatever the coach says, I'm going to do. And then like when I mess up and he gets on me, it's like it hurts and it's hard to recover from it. And you want to do wrong or you want to do right. And then there's the players that are like, I'm just going to play basketball. I don't care what you say to me. Like, I'm just going to go out there and I'm going to play. And last year, that's what I was like. I don't care what happens. I'm going to play. And as the season went on, I got even more into it. Like, I don't care about anything else. I'm just going to play basketball. I work harder than anyone. So I'm going to shoot the ball whenever I want to. I'm going to play hard and I'm going to do my best to help my team win. So that was a mindset that I had. And like, that was something that, again, my mom, all my coaches, my friends were like, Nigel, you worry too much. You think too much. You try to like do everything that's right. Like just go out there and just play. Like if you miss a shot, it's okay. You don't have to take the perfect shot every time you shoot the ball. And I was like, just shoot the ball or just shoot this shot. Just play. Like, don't think. So that was always my problem is like being too smart and intelligent in basketball. And then like knowing when to like, as my trainer Charlie says in the summer, he's like, you got to find out how to be dumb, Nigel. You know, you got to be dumb.
Is that not dumb? Let's say naive.
No. He said dumb. He meant dumb. He said, when you're out there, just stop trying to worry about like doing the right thing and like doing this and doing that and making sure this is perfect. Like just play basketball, man. You know, don't worry about it. Like just, you got to have this good amount of like, I want to play basketball the smart way, the right way. And then just be like dumb or as you say, naive, just be dumb and naive. And like you're a kid out there and you're just playing a game.
Hey man, my attitude is always, if you're going to sit me on that bench, it's because I've tried too hard. You know, I've done too much. You need to sit me down and settle me down. You don't need to sit me down and tell me to get in the game or get my head in the game, you know?
That's a good way to put it. That's also something I say. I was like, all right, if I'm on the court, I'm going to do whatever I want to do until the dude just takes me out and says, all right, now I stop doing this. And he's never said that, so.
He's a great coach, man. I love him. I love Demetrius.
You know, this year, like, the slow start, you know, everyone's like you said, about knowing what to read and what to listen to and what not to is like, you know, you got the slow start. Everyone's telling me, and the comments are crazy, you know, that's why you got to stay off those. Everyone watching, don't read your comments and stuff. You know, just share your memes with your friends, which is really what I use Instagram for. Yeah. Share and memes and laugh.
And if you're gonna write stuff to people, at least do it with your own face and your own there. You know what I mean?
But the slow start, you know, is like honestly, I'm just two made threes per game away from averaging like 14 or 15 points. Yeah. And it'd be a completely different conversation. So like you just keep putting in the work, you know, like the shots are gonna fall. The form technique is there, the confidence there, because the confidence comes from your work. And you know, it's the old Kobe adage. Everyone loves to say Kobe. Your confidence comes from the work you put in.
Exactly.
You know, like I said, not many working harder. So it's going to be good. And then when they start falling, then, you know, then everyone's going to be your friend again. So
let me finish off the basketball part with that five-game playoff last year in the EuroLeague playoffs. I got you written down here. Game one, 38 minutes. Game two, 37 minutes. Game three, 35 minutes, heartbreaker to Sloukas. Game four, all 40 minutes. Game five, but dude, you played almost 37 minutes a game in those five games, which all happened within like 10 days. And that, I mean, that was just a tough series to watch.
Tough series. The minutes wasn't the issue. It was just like they were such a great team, and yeah. It just like came down to like the little things. We don't want to pile on excuses, but no, they were a great team, and yeah. Honestly, like. You know, like what anybody says to be a championship team, and as great as they were, they earned the level of luck they got on that game when he shot from Sloukas, because right. Honestly, we outplayed them that game.
Yeah, y'all, dominated them that game.
That would have been three wins in a row. We lost the first one, and we outplayed them for three games in a row, and we should have won the series 3-1. But
I can't remember who was supposed to switch out on Sloukas, man, but they just gave him that.
If I was any closer, I would have fouled him. And then,
it was you who stepped out on him.
What's worse, fouling a guy and then him making the free throws, or him shooting over you? You know, because if you foul him, then everyone's like, "Why are you fouling?" Blah 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 blah.
It went off the backboard too, didn't it?
I tried to cancel that game out. Now it's a great series, and I'm scarred too because I would never bump a roller. Tark Black probably had 8 straight points on switches, and they ran the same play the last like 5 minutes.
Right.
Targ rolls wide open. I not even half a second bump him. Sasha pops to the top of the three. You know how fast he shoots the ball. He gets it off and they tie the game. If I don't give up that three, who knows what happens? But that's that bump scarred me for life. But no, they're a great team. Like I said, we honestly outplayed them for 3 straight games. They hit the shot. They deserved it. They were the best team, you know, all year. And when you're playing great like that, you deserve some luck, and they earned it for sure. And then they finished the job at home, game five, and then they went on to the Final Four. But it was a great series, especially the way we made it tough, because everyone was saying 3-0 or 3-1.
Right, exactly.
Because, you know, they handed our butts to us the first two games in the regular season. I think they won by a average margin of like 25 points. So the way we were able to, like, you know, compete in that series with them really was good for us to show, like, hey guys, you know, we're a good group, we're a good core, and bringing most of them back this year. And like I said, they were a great team. They deserved it. They took care of business on their home court.
Crazy atmosphere at the Peace and Friendship Stadium, isn't it? It's so much fun. So much fun to play in, though.
For sure, it is. It's insane. It's insane. You know, they have really very, like all Europe, very passionate fans. Yeah. Tough place to play.
The crossover test.
Now you got the languages down. You get the foundation thing. You got trademarking, inventions, everything. Right now, you got the EuroLeague trivia game, man. You know how it goes. 5 questions.
Okay.
Each one is worth 10 more points. So number one is worth 10, 2 is 20, 3 is 30, 4 is 50. And I know my guys should be sending me, I always forget who's got the record. I think 100 points is the record, if I'm not mistaken. And I can't remember exactly who did it. We've done so many of these, but we start from easy, we go to hard. Are you ready?
Okay, I'll just say this right now. My
No, it's not great. No excuses.
It's not great.
Come on, it's all pretty recent, so I think you can do good. All right, question number one with 10 points. Who scored the last 2 points of last year's Final Four?
Oh, Yule, right?
There you go, Sergio Yule. See, you got 10 point. Yeah, that's old school. That's old school basketball. They don't have that much anymore.
Yeah.
Question number two. Which coach has recently moved from one EuroLeague team to another?
What coach has recently moved from one EuroLeague team to another? I mean, okay, the term recent could be, well, Lasso just went from Madrid to Bayern.
Does no, that this, count? This season.
This season?
Oh. I'll give you that hint.
Okay, this season, what coach went from one team to another? I can't believe I lost that already. Did Dusko get another job already? Did he? Is that the answer? Like, oh my God.
You got it. It went from Red Star back to Baskonia.
You did not go back to Baskonia. Are you sure? Are you sure?
Dude, listen, they sent me these questions, and when I saw it last night, I was like, you're kidding me. I was the same exact reaction of you as you have.
They just give him a lifetime contract at Baskonia. I don't understand why he keeps getting fired from Baskonia to get rehired again. Like, just ink him a 10-year deal and, like, let it go.
Yeah, just let him take a sabbatical for a year, you know?
Yeah, just like, come on. Just get unlimited vacation time or something.
All right, I'm going to give you the 20 points because you got it. Question number three for 30. I'm dying, man, because the same thing I thought last night. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Anyways, number three, which is the team that you have faced the most times in the EuroLeague?
Team that I have faced the most times in the EuroLeague.
The team that you've played the most games against.
It would probably have to be either Bayern or Olympiacos. I want to say Bayern.
Damn, you should have went with Olympiacos.
Is it Olympiacos?
Yeah, you played them 14 times.
What was Bayern then?
I don't know. They didn't give me that question. They didn't give me second place. Oh, Pablo just stepped in and said 13.
I should have said Olympic because Olympiacos. Oh, no.
I figured we just got done talking about the five-game playoff. That's five games right there.
I was just thinking, like, we had a five-game series with Bayern when I was in Barcelona. That's why I was like,
okay.
It's one of those two teams.
But you're out on the 30-point question. Here comes the 40-point question. Which former player has played in the same teams that you have played for in the EuroLeague? Meaning this player has played for Žalgiris, this player has played for FC Barcelona, and he's also played for Fenerbahce.
What player? Okay, let me eliminate this right now. It's not Jan. Jan never played at Žalgiris. It's not, Roland Smits. He never played for Fenerbahce. Oh, former. Okay, that helps. I think.
Did I say? I said former. I said former player, didn't I?
Oh, Šarūnas.
There you go.
Okay.
40 points. Did I say former player? I thought I did.
Did you say former player?
I thought I did. Maybe I was trying to mislead you.
Yeah, you were. Yeah.
All right. So that's 10, 20. That's 30. Make it 70 points. Yeah, I think you have a chance right here to become the all-time leader, if I'm not mistaken.
I'm locked in.
Who has been the fastest coach to reach 200 wins in the EuroLeague?
Fastest coach?
Mm-hmm.
200 wins in the EuroLeague. Well, someone just won that, didn't they? I feel like someone just got that. If I had to pick a name, I would say Lasso.
Nope. Edri Messina made it in 263 games. Your head coach, Itudis, made it in 265 games. And Xavi Pascual's in third place with 280.
Oh, man. I feel like because Lasso was at Barcelona, at Madrid, I feel like they just won all the time. So I racked them up really quickly.
Yeah, I don't think that's a bad answer. I just don't think he's reached 200 yet.
He hasn't reached 200 yet?
He must have. I mean, he was over 10, 11 years, right?
He for sure has to have reached 200, right?
I don't know. That's a good question because in the first couple of years, they weren't that dominant. So.
Oh, they weren't?
Yeah, they were there all the time, but they were, you know. That's a good question.
I want to recount. for Lasso. Wait.
Our Pablo's going to have to look up Pablo Lasso, but I think he's going to take it more games, though. Hey, my man, look at it. This is took a little longer than you probably wanted, than I probably expected, but it's been amazing talking to you. I've heard from so many people about the type of person you are. All my research that I've done and everything that you've proved to me has shown me that you're just more than just a basketball player, man, and that's cool. You got everything going on. You know, the whole story about your stepdad, your mom, your family is an amazing story, because so many of those things can go the other way in our life. You know what I mean? And you're a lucky man, and you take advantage of every moment of it, man. I just appreciate your time, and I appreciate you being here. And when you come to Madrid, I want a hot dog cooker.
You are. Got you. Got you. I will do. Thanks so much for having me. Hope it was great. And yes, these interviews with me, you know, always go longer than expected because they're better than anticipated. So I appreciate you staying on. I'm sure, you know, you got sponsors or producers saying, hey, let's wrap it up.
No, man.
We don't wrap up greatness. We keep greatness rolling.
That's it. When we get a good guest, we keep it rolling, man. We keep it rolling. The worst part was when we cut you short. Then it's like, oh, shoot, that was a terrible interview, wasn't it?
No, I'm good. Appreciate it so much. Thanks for...
Nigel, appreciate it. Look forward to seeing you in Madrid. I'll see you in Madrid when you guys come to play here.
Will do. We definitely need to be focused. Have you seen Madrid? Those guys are good.
Thanks for listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas. If you like what you've heard, subscribe now so you don't miss an episode, and leave us a review on iTunes and Apple Podcasts. You can also get in touch via Twitter and Instagram at EuroLeague using the hashtag ELCrossover or on Facebook at the EuroLeague.